I'm Laura Vinroot Poole, and this is What We Wore.
Ivan Shaw is the former photography director at Vogue for over 20 years and an amazing orator of the stories and excitement of the height of the magazine. He shares a wealth of wisdom from his career at Condé Nast, where he's now the corporate photography director of Condé Nast and visuals editor of the World of Interiors. I know the answer to this, but tell me again, where are you from?
Well, I'm from a few places. I was born in New Jersey, but I spent most of my childhood in Connecticut, primarily Stamford, Connecticut, which is southeastern Connecticut. My mom still lives there, so I kind of feel that's home.
And how did you come to be interested in fashion or in photography? Which came first?
But photography definitely came first. And I was kind of obsessed with photography books when I was a kid. I had my parents' life book of pictures, which I looked through.
Do you still have it?
I lost my parents' copy somewhere. They lost it or I lost it. And then I went and bought another copy. And it was so powerful for me to look at it again, like 30 years since I had looked at it before, because I remembered every picture and how much it had impacted my understanding of photography. And one of the most amazing things was one of the pictures I remembered most was a Don McCullen picture from the Troubles in Ireland of soldiers running through the streets of Belfast. And I actually got to meet Don McCullen and he sat in my office.
Wow.
One of the great moments of my career, Don McCullen, one of the greatest photojournalists of all time, was sitting in my office and we were chatting. And I was like the guy from the book, like I got to meet him and like talk to him. And it was unbelievable. So fashion comes a little bit later on.
I had that same experience. My grandparents had it. And I don't know if they were different. I mean, I don't think they were different, but there may have been different versions of it. But one thing that I really remember was, well, two parts of it. One was Varishka coming out of water in Greece, right? She had this really cool bikini on with like gold jewelry. And the other was that, what was the first bikini? I can't remember her. Rudy Gernreich. There was a photograph of that too in it. And
yeah.
I just remember, I mean, I was obsessed with the whole book, but particularly the fashion when I look back on it.
I bet. I mean, Varishka, I think was Henry Clark. I have to go back and look. I think maybe it was Henry Clark. And the Peggy Moffat.
Yes.
With Rudy Gernreich, which I think is William Claxton. I want to say William Claxton, but I know the pictures, but I think it's William Claxton.
So crazy.
I know. And the other book was the Ernst Haas book called In America, which is just, he was a phenomenal photojournalist. And when I started taking pictures, I wanted to take pictures that looked like Ernst Haas. His daughter, Victoria, is a friend of mine. And so I told her when I met her, I said, you know, when somebody introduced us, I said, you know, I used to be a photographer and I want to take pictures like your dad. And it was a picture of Lexington Avenue after a snowstorm, which is one of my favorite Ernst Haas pictures. And I always say that picture is the reason why I moved to New York City.
Wow.
Because it was so, I mean, there were other reasons too, but it was so fantastic and so glamorous. And I'd like in this really, not in an obvious way, but just in this, it was so mystical. And I just thought, I want to be there. Like, that's where I want to live and work and have my life.
Did you have a camera at that time and play around with photography?
When I was about 14, my brother actually got a camera, I think from my grandparents, who didn't use it. And I picked it up and started taking pictures. And my first trip is actually fashion related. We were living in, I think, Connecticut. We were in maybe in Connecticut or Bedford Hills, New York. We were there for 1 year. And maybe Connecticut when I first got to Connecticut. And we went into New York for the day. We had tickets to a tennis match. And I brought the camera, but we also went to Paul Stewart, because whenever we went to New York, my dad would buy his clothes. My mom loved it too, but my dad would buy his suits and his coats at Paul Stewart.
Yeah.
And I remember going to Paul Stewart and I had the camera around my neck and we went to the tennis match and I took pictures, color transparency pictures at the tennis match. And those were the first pictures I ever took, like as a photographer.
Wow. We've talked before, but tell me a little bit about your dad and what he did and how that played into this too.
Yeah, he passed a couple of years ago. My dad was a kid from the Bronx, really smart. You'll appreciate this. He was a textile salesman in the 60s, and he and his business partner were one of the first people to sell cotton jeans.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think if I have that right, the story right, because it's denim originally, obviously, but I think they were selling cotton jeans, but they were very early in the jeans business in the early 60s. And I think it was cotton jeans. The guy he was working for also owned a newspaper in Northern Connecticut. And he said, look, do you want to go to Northern Connecticut and be this advertising manager for this newspaper called the Journal Enquirer, which was a daily in Manchester, Connecticut. I mean, really, I mean, a wonderful place, but kind of the middle of nowhere for somebody from New York. My dad always jokes that he went into a diner like when he first got there and he ordered a bagel and the waitress said, "What's a bagel?" You know, so this is a kid from the Bronx, you know. And my mom went with, of course, we went with them, right? And my mother always said when she got there, she had, you know, they had lived outside of New York City. She didn't know anyone. There wasn't much to do. It was a quiet town. So she would kind of go to the museum and do things, and she would take me with her. And she remembers doing that. I guess, I don't know, maybe I was young and I wasn't really in school. My brother was already in grade school. And so I would start to do stuff with her and go to museums and go to stores when she'd go shopping, which are two things that become pivotal in my life.
Right, right.
Which is exactly. Kind of crazy.
So you spent a lot of time around that the newspaper and understood at a young age that that was a career, that was something that you could do?
Yes. I mean, I, you know, my dad was a real newspaper, he was a salesman, but he was a true newspaper guy. He was a publisher, he became publisher of a paper, and we would go to the presses at night, and writers and photographers from the newspaper would have dinner, they'd come over for dinner. And so I was definitely in it. I don't think I was like, I want to have a career in newspapers, but I certainly had the bug. And when I look what happened to me and the thing, what I was drawn to, it makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah.
I was more a magazine guy, but my dad ended up, he became a newspaper publisher. It's kind of a long story, which I won't get too into, but he ended up in about 1986 starting his own newspaper company. And weirdly, I had this weird thing. I didn't know where I wanted to go to college. I just didn't really, I wasn't that focused, but somebody had said Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts would be a good place. We went to like a college career counselor because I didn't really, my guidance counselor was like, you know, hopeless. Like he was like a bodybuilder at a big high, public high school. He was like, yeah, you should go to college. And it didn't go much farther than that. But we went to this college guy and he was like, well, you know, you should, maybe Clark University. And I think I had kind of was on my radar anyway. So I applied and I was waitlisted, but I got in. But weirdly, my father was wanted to build a company and he was in the process of buying a newspaper called Business Worcester, which was a biweekly business newspaper in Worcester, Massachusetts, which is where Clark is located. He was like, well, why don't we go up and see Clark? And I am trying to close this deal anyway. So we drove to Worcester because he was in the process of closing the deal. And we sort of got on, we pulled up at the campus and we walked around. He's like, what do you think? I was like, it looks really nice. He's like, yeah, it looks really nice. And you know, you have to understand my dad was a guy who went to night school at City College of New York for 13 years and worked all day. So
yeah, wow.
Have, you know, he was a kid from the Bronx. He lived with his parents. He had no under sense, and not in a bad way, but he just didn't like the idea of going to college and this whole experience, this 360 did not exist. He had just gone to night school. My mother had gone to college, but was a dancer. So she wasn't really that interested in it. You know, like super, she wasn't super into it. My grandfather was an academic. So it wasn't like I was like really focused on, you know, the college experience. I just kind of walked on the campus and I was like, it looks fine. It's nice. There's trees, yeah, there's brick buildings. And that night we had dinner with the guy who was, he was going to eventually buy the business from. So,
right.
But that got me to Worcester and got me into photography because I had been working at a restaurant when I was in school, in high school, and making money and I wanted to work. And he said, go down to the newspaper, they'll find a job for you. And I got there. And the publisher said, what are you interested in? I said, well, you know, I'm interested in photography. And he said, do you have a portfolio? And I was like, of course not. I had like a pack of pictures. But they put me to work in the darkroom just as a helper. And
wow.
I was working for a young photographer named Christopher Navin. It was a 24-year-old guy who was brilliant. And I started working for him, just helping him in the darkroom. And he taught me photography. And we're still friends today, you know,
wow,
40 years later. And I learned it just totally on the job. And I was going to school at the same time.
What did you study in school?
Art history and philosophy. I was super into philosophy. You know, I had this thing at college where you're supposed to take like the introductory class, then you take the next level. And I ignored all that. I would never call myself a rebel, but I seemed to ignore that. And I would just pick classes that I was interested in once. So I took a modern European philosophy class, which was an advanced class. I walk in the first day, the guy's a really tough professor. He said, if this is your first philosophy class, get out. And I ignored him. And I ended up getting, I think, an A or a B in that class. I got super into it. And then I walked into an art criticism class, which again was an advanced class, which I didn't belong into. And I just completely clicked like immediately.
Wow.
Like I was like, oh yeah. So I was asking questions of the professor and I'm like, yeah. And she came up, she's like, you're a history student. I was like, no. And it clicked, you know, it really clicked.
It sounds like you had a really, really engaged and enriching college experience, which is, sounds unexpected for something you just happened upon.
Yes, I did. If I If I look back, the only regret, because I worked every day and I got so into photography, I didn't really spend a lot of time with people socializing, hanging out. And to be blunt, I didn't have a lot of friends in college. I was very much a loner. I was a loner in high school too. So I was not really social. I didn't have much of a social life. I had a few friends, and a part of that was, I think, just who I am, but also because every day I would get up, I'd go to work, then I'd run back, I'd go to class, and I'd run back to work. And I had this kind of alternate life at the newspaper that now, looking back, I'm really glad that happened because it shaped the rest of my career. But like, I never did like junior year abroad or summer. Like, I spent all summer.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what'd you do in the summers?
Nothing. I had to work and stay because then once I got involved, they were like, we really need you. Because I started taking pictures for Business Worcester. And then we opened up a magazine, Worcester Monthly. And I went home the first summer. And then I came back, and Chris and everybody, they're like, dude, we need you to stay. Like, you work here. You can't just disappear for 3 months and we're not going to get another person. And they're like, you need to stay. So I stayed all the next couple of summers. And it was tough because everybody had left. I didn't have a lot of friends to begin with, and any friends that I did have were gone. So I had Christopher, my friend from work, and a few people. But I mean, I spent a lot of time alone because I would work and that was it. And I wasn't going to school. And maybe I took a class or two, but my weekends were like super quiet. Like, I was really alone, which at 20 or 21, when you're older, so, but it was tough. But looking back, it was totally worth it. But I was completely immersed, invested. Like, there was no like, oh, I watch these movies and I see like Normal People or something, right? Which is that wonderful series on Hulu from Sally Rooney's book. And I see the college students like in the south of France and in Italy hanging out and like hooking up and, going to museums. And I'm like, wow, that's actually what you were supposed to do in college, not sitting in an office building in Worcester, Mass, which I like, working at like, but I say that facetiously. It was fantastic. First of all, the people I worked with were terrific and brilliant, and I learned so much. But they would do this thing where they would say, okay, Ivan, you have to go photograph this person, Marsha Hunt or something. Here's her phone number. Call her and make an appointment, right? And there was no internet, right? So you couldn't search it. She owns a real estate development company, in Fitchburg. And I'd be like, hi, Marcia, this is Ivan Shaw from Business Worcester. Can I photograph you tomorrow at 2? And she'd say, sure. And or whatever, we'd make an appointment. And I would drive out there knowing nothing, usually not even having a picture of the person. And I'd have to walk into the room and connect with this person and have like this human experience, and B, figure out what picture to take like in 15 minutes. And I would shoot like one roll of film, like black and white, 35 millimeter. That was it.
And develop it yourself.
Yeah, and develop it, go back to the darkroom and develop myself. So I had to kind of process all of this like in 20 minutes. And I think it really helped me, like as a 19, 20-year-old kid, and to be thrown into a situation with an adult professional and have this like 1 hour relationship. And it was wild. It was absolutely wild and such an experience. Yeah. But very different than college.
I've done a lot, 150 or so of these, and I don't know that I ever, people sort of glaze over college, like nobody ever, but I find your experience really interesting and how sort of it really dialed you in on skills, actually, really, which I think is really rare.
That's the thing. I mean, when I look back, I feel so fortunate that I found that thing that I was kind of good at, that I really liked. The part of me is a little sad that I didn't get to like really be 20 and 21 years old in the same way as.
So from Clark, how did you get your, you had your first internship at Vanity Fair? How did that happen?
All I knew is I wanted to go to New York and become a photographer, right? And I got into NYU graduate school in photography. And I was like, okay, now my parents will pay for it, and I get to New York. That's all I care. I just want to get to New York and be a photographer. It wasn't too expensive. It was an easy program. It was a big deal. So I got to New York and I was in this program, which was really wild because it was this far out fine art photography program. Of course, me being me, I didn't do any real research and find the right program. I just was like, I want to go to New York. NYU is a good school. If I can get it, there's a program. I just signed up and I got in, And so I get there and it's super far out, right? Like, my advisor is like this way out artist for the East Village. There was a lot of women. There was really at the time of Francesca Woodman was super important. Everything was super political. It's terrible, but my joke was that like in class, all the women were doing nude self-portraits, right? So I used to joke it was like the ultimate high school fantasy. You got to see every girl in class naked. It literally was like that. And my favorite one was that one of the women did a picture of herself naked on a bike, and so they put it, she puts it up, and the teacher says, "What does everybody think?" And I said, "Nice bike. I really like the bike." And everybody cracked up, and she came up after me, and she was like, "I really actually appreciated that because, I was kind of just joking on the picture, and you were the one person to take it seriously." But anyway, I ended up got invited to a dinner in the East Village with a friend of mine from Clark. He said, "We're going to meet at the corner of First, I don't know, First Street and Ave Avenue A or something." So I'm standing at this corner, and this other guy is standing there. And I said, "Hey, are you Brian's friend?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "My name is Howard." Turns out he was an editorial assistant at Vanity Fair. And he said, "I sit right next to the assistant to the photography director." And I said, "Wow, because I'm looking for an internship." And at that time, Vanity Fair was kind of my favorite magazine. It was really like at one of its peaks. It was phenomenal. Just phenomenal. And he said, "If you give me your resume, I'll give it to her. She's really nice. She's my friend. Sit right next to her." He was working for Michael Caruso, who was an editor at Vanity Fair, who had been the editor of The Village Voice. So one of these like really fantastic New York magazine editors. It was the old days. I went up to 350 Madison Avenue with my resume and I gave it to him. And I got an interview with the photography director, Elizabeth Biondi, who was super tough, but I got through it. And she sent me to Susan White, the photo editor, and they gave me the internship.
Wow.
And at Vanity Fair Photo Department, and that is starts February 1991. And it's really amazing because I look back and like how fast I got to New York in September of 1990. I got the internship in February of 1991, and then I was hired back as the freelance assistant in the photo department in July of 1992.
Wow.
So like by from September 90 to 92, like my whole life changed.
Yeah. And did you finish the graduate program?
So this is the other funny story. I was going to the school and I was really struggling, and I was so immersed in Vanity Fair and everything that was happening that I decided at one point it was time for me to register for the next semester, right? And I get at the train, I get on the train at Grand Central, and I get off. I'm supposed to go to like Union Square or Astor Place, and I get off at 23rd Street, and I'm like, I can't do this. I can't go back to school. All I want to do is work at Vanity Fair. I just don't care. And I get back to work and I call my parents and I'm like, don't be mad at me, but I just can't do this anymore. Like, I found my calling. I just can't do this. And they're like, okay, we're kind of upset because there's somebody on this, but like, we really want you to get a master's degree. But like, my parents are amazing. We're amazing, And they were like, okay, we're not, we're going to honor that. Like, you don't want to go to school. We're not going to force you to go to school. And so I quit. And then, and all along, my parents were like, you didn't have much left to go. And then I finally decided about a year, year and a half later, I should really finish my master's. And the brilliant thing was, I made an appointment with my advisor, and he's kind of this great guy, amazing guy, but he was just kind of like, and I think he did kind of forgotten that I had disappeared for like a year. Like, I don't think it was like really a big deal for him. It was East Village, it was 90, whatever, it's cool. And I came back, I said, I really want to, I mean, I just want to take some classes. What do I need to do to finish? And he was great. And he kind of was like, okay, just wait, you take these classes, you can do a final project, and we'll get you through it. I did, and I got my master's. So I have a master's degree from NYU, which is great. It was funny. But he was super cool about it.
From Vanity Fair, did you went from intern to working full time?
Right. So an intern to being a freelance photo assistant in the photo department. And my boss at the time, Susan White, who was wonderful, who's the photo editor of Vanity Fair, has huge impact on my career. She knew I wanted a staff position. And so, because you benefits and all that kind of stuff. And there was this just opening for the assistant to Charles Churchward, who was the design director, brilliant design director of Vanity Fair. And she kind of put my name in for it. God bless her. She kind of put me up for the job. And but it was also this weird thing where I went in one day. It's weird how things happen. We were doing a story on Guy Bourdin, the famous French fashion photographer of the 70s. And they said, go into Charlie's office. He has all these old French Vogues. You got to go through it and find some stories or something like that. And I was sitting in his office with him, going through all of these old French Vogues from the 70s, which he had in his office because he was obsessed, And we just clicked. We got on really well. And we started talking about photography. I'm like, wow, like this guy totally gets it. And he's like amazing. And in my mind, I'm like, this is the guy. Like, I want to work for this guy. And I got that job in May of 1994. And then in November of 1994, they made him design director of Vogue. And he called me into his office and he said, I can bring one person with me to Vogue. Do you want to come with me? And I was like, sure.
So tell me about that first day at Vogue. How did you feel?
Well, it was very funny. I mean, it was, because there were a couple of things. One, I remember distinctly, we both dressed up, shirts and ties, like just, I mean, like old school, you know, shirt ties. And I remember them calling me into Anna's office and in introducing myself to Anna and said hello. And she got up and we shook hands. And that was my first time meeting Anna. And it was funny because when I got there, I was kind of confused. I couldn't understand why you would do a story on belts. I couldn't understand why you would do a story on nails. You know, I kind of understood like a big fashion story, but like, why do we do a story on belts? How do you do a story on belts? How do you do a story on nails? So I was a little confused because I had looked at Vogue, but not, you know, through the lens of somebody who's really like buying or shopping or like, you know, I just was like, wow, that picture's amazing. Those pictures are amazing. But I didn't understand the process or the fashion point of view. But I thought to myself, oh, look, I'm going to give it 2 years because this is a good opportunity. And I'll just try to make it work for 2 years and then I'll see. And then so my joke for like the next 20 years is I was just giving it another 2 years, you know. I had that job. I started, in November 94. And then in the beginning of 1996, the photo editor at the time left. And I got the job in April of 1996. I became photo editor of Vogue. I was 26 years old.
Did you know exactly what that entailed before you got the job?
No.
Yeah.
I knew I was over my head for sure. I was a little over my head, you know. I think there's there's that Navy SEALs thing about being 30% over your head. Like they always say that you can go 30% beyond your limit. Beyond that, you're probably gonna like die, right? You're gonna get in trouble. So like if you're like underwater, you can go 30% longer than you think you can go, right? Your comfort zone. I was definitely at like 30, 40% the first year or two of that job.
Had Charles had that job before?
No, he was an art director. This was kind of interesting. He was always an art director. He was never a photo editor, but he knew it. He'd worked with a lot of photo editors. He was tough. I mean, he's one of my closest friends still to this day. We just saw him this summer, but he was tough too. You know, it was tough and he was tough.
Tough about like quality or details all of it.
They set the bar really high.
Yeah, really high.
And, you know, they set the bar really high and like you just had to hit it and otherwise you were done.
How did your life transform when you became the photo editor?
It was completely immersive. I mean, when I first got to New York, I didn't have much of a life, one or two friends. It was totally immersive. I mean, it was so intense to get up and go and do that all day. And first of all, the magazine was doing really well. I had so much work to do. There were so many shoots. There was so much that needed to be done.
It was a thick magazine.
It was a thick magazine. Every issue was 300-400 pages.
Yeah,
September was 800 pages. We were working constantly, had an enormous amount of responsibility. And I was also working in like this alternative universe of like all of these amazing fashion women and some of the greatest fashion editors of all time. I mean, you got to remember, you go down the hall when I first got there, you had Grace Coddington, Phyllis Posnick, Camilla Nickerson,
Tawny.
Bronna Wolfe, Tawny comes a couple of years later, then Tawny, Paul Cavaco. I mean, like it was crazy.
And did you know who they were but just from being there? Yeah, right.
I didn't know the fashion world. You know, I didn't really have any exposure to the fashion world. So I didn't really know who they were. And they weren't famous yet,
right?
Too. You know, they were Vogue editors and they were really known in the industry, but they weren't famous the way they are now.
Exactly.
But I look back and then in Anna Wintour and like, you know, and that was the thing also. And even going back to Vanity Fair, the level of people, I thought when I was a photographer, it would take me 30 years to get to that level. And suddenly when I got to Vanity Fair, originally Annie Leibovitz was walking down the hall, Herb Ritts, Helmut Newton, Michelle Comte, some of the best photographers ever working there. And the writers too. And I was thinking about it recently, sort of prepping for this, that, you know, John Richardson was writing art, you know, Picasso's biographer, Dominic Dunn was working at Vanity Fair, Christopher Hitchens, Frank DeFord,
Nancy Joe Sales,
Maureen Orth. I mean, amazing writers. Yeah. And it was the same thing at Vogue. It was like, again, Annie had just started she starts to work in the mid 90s, but Irving Penn and Helmut Newton are working, contributing regularly to the magazine.
That's crazy.
And then David Bailey and, you know, and all the others and Arthur Elgort and Herb Ritts and Annie, of course, then Steven Meisel is at his height during that time.
You have the primary relationship with these photographers.
Well, it's more complicated than that. I'm more producer. The edits actually happened in the art department. So photo editor was actually a misnomer. I was not editing film. I was producing shoots. So I had this really great thing. So for the center of the magazine, The Well, we had all these major photographers. And so I would do the bookings, but the fashion editors would work with them. So if Grace Coddington was working with Steven Meisel on a story, they didn't really need my input. You know, I wasn't going to add anything to that conversation. I was just make sure, like, I would talk to Steven's agent and I would say, okay, we're going to do it this week. Grace, are you okay on the week of the 19th? Yes, she's fine. And then I was kind of done until the shoot was done. And then I would pick up and handle all the post-production. Huh. So for the major stories, I was generally not really, unless it was a feature, I had more one-on-one contact. And I'll tell you a story about that, which I told at the Mint. But for the front of the magazine, the front sections like View, Vogue's View with Catherine Betts and People Are Talking About in the beauty section, I got to hire the photographers and the stylists and produce the shoots creatively, completely on my own. Wow. For the most part, which I look back and it's crazy.
Yeah.
They just kind of let me do it. You know, and you know, and I failed a fair amount. I mean, there was plenty of shoots that were like, what would it feel like? And it would look at me like, what a disaster. Like, what were you thinking? You know, which was a lesson that I learned actually through all of that, which actually comes from the Sidney Lumet's book, Making Movies. And he writes in the book that you can be successful while still failing some of the time.
Yeah.
And that was profound for me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, holy shit, like, yes, I can, you know, I, because every time a shoot got killed, because Anna had no qualms about it, like something just done. And for good reason. I mean, they kept the bar really high, but it would be like a stab in the heart, you know, every like, oh my God, I'm such a failure. But I kind of had that point where like, no, I can still be successful at this while still failing some of the time. And that was exactly the way it was. But it was just incredible. I mean, the women and everybody that was there, everybody was so good. As somebody once said, you always felt like you were with the best of whatever it was.
Yeah.
The best of that kind of person was there. Jeffrey Steingarten was writing the food column. Yeah. Jeffrey was brilliant. Julia Reed was writing on politics. Yeah. She was brilliant. You know, I mean, it was really. And then I just had like, I got to talk to like amazing people. And John Galliano came in. Andre Leon Talley was there, who was a huge impact on my life and everyone's life who knew him. And I can remember, which is probably 94, 95, no later than 96, John came to Vogue and Andre walked him down the hallway and he introduced me to John Galliano. And he was like, this is Ivan Shaw, he's our photo editor, which was amazing that he bothered to do that because I certainly was not high on the hierarchy at that point. And I was introduced to John Galliano.
Wow.
And he said, hello. And I just was like, I can still feel myself standing in the doorway, in the hallway, and shaking hands with John Galliano. And it's, again, it's like 95, 96.
I was going to ask what kept you at Vogue for 20 years, but I don't know it's that.
It was so exciting and so challenging. And it just, and we were successful. Like we were great at it, you know? And I remember there were nights I would have like 10 shoots to do for like the front of the book, say, and I would come home at night and I'd be sitting there with a piece of paper. And I was like, okay, here are the 10 stories. I have to figure out a photographer and a fashion editor for each story. And I would start writing names down. I thought, how exciting. I mean, it's like, but the power, but also just super exciting.
It's the dream.
The dream of it. And then I would see the story of Vogue magazine. And when it was successful, it was like, yes. And it was just so exciting. And then Anna was just this force of nature. So we started doing some other magazines. We started doing exhibitions. We did books with the Met Ball. Like all of that happens simultaneously.
At that time too, I mean, I think that was when you, I know you knew you had it, but when you realized what your archives were.
We had a number of archivists. They used to call it the morgue, believe it or not, because it's where things went to die.
Yeah.
But a gentleman named Charlie Shipes, who's still a friend of mine, became head of the archive in, I think, early mid-90s. And he was the one who coined it the Condé Nast Archive and started digitizing things and started to kind of get his arms around it. Charlie is this absolutely brilliant, amazing person. He had worked for David Hockney and he understood the art world, but he understood photography and he started to give it shape, I think. So I think he deserves the credit with giving it shape. I, to be honest, didn't spend that much time looking. I was so focused on getting through every issue.
Yeah.
That I did, looking back, well, there's two things. One, you know, I used to say the best and worst part of my job is every month I had to recreate my job, right? Like, so at the end of the month, I had to start all over again from zero, what I had done the month before. But Anna's focus was always, you know, we always look forward. And that comes, I think, also from Alexander Lieberman, our great editorial director. Always look forward, just keep going forward. And I think there was just so much to do that I was like, I just need to focus on what's in front of me. You know, that's, I kind of wish I had had more perspective, but I just didn't have really the brain. I don't think I had the bandwidth.
Yeah, I'm like, did you even take a vacation in those 20 years?
Not
Like,
a
probably
lot.
not.
And my friend, my even some of the people work for me, like, Ivan, you never take vacations. My idea, and this is interesting because it comes up in my marriage, my idea of a vacation was going to LA for 4 days to see all my friends who I worked with in LA, which I loved. And I love my friends there. And it was super fun. It's always hot and sunny. And I'd stay at a cool hotel and we'd have fun. But when I first got married, or Lisa and I first got together, I would like, let's go on vacation. And I would take her to LA for 4 days. And finally, she was like, you know, Ivan, that's not a vacation. Like going to LA and having dinner with your friends from work is not actually like a vacation. It's more like a work trip that you're bringing me along. And I was like, you know, you're right. Like it was a really good life lesson for me. I'm like, oh, so we need to like go to Mexico and like lay on the beach for a week or, you know. It was really hard. I think there was so much coming at me all the time that it was very hard to switch off. And, you know, honestly, the main people at Vogue never really switched off either. I mean, they would go away in August and stuff like that, but, you know, they were just everybody kind of worked all the time. And the photographers would disappear in August, they'd disappear at Christmas. But other than that, it was like full on. And we still, you know, always had to do another issue.
How do you think your life would have been different if you hadn't worked at Vogue?
I don't think I would have made it as a photographer. And I say that because I think I was pretty talented as a portrait photographer. I was okay. But I don't know if I would have had the confidence to be a freelancer my whole life. You have to have a real confidence to make it as a freelancer and a will and a like a fearlessness that I don't think I had, especially because going back, my dad lost his business in 1990 with the SNL crisis. And so and that was very difficult for me. It was very difficult for my family. And I worked for him at the time. So everybody at work turned on him. It was really ugly. Paychecks didn't come through. It got really ugly. And so I went through that with him. And that was very scary and a real life lesson. And so I think there was a part of me that did not want an unstable financial life. I wanted stability. And Condé Nast not only brought me glamour and all these other amazing things, but it brought this tremendous sense of stability.
Yeah.
So I think I would have found something else stabilizing. Now, I don't know what that would have, maybe in the art world, probably in the art world. I think there was enough of my brain. I don't think I ever would have made it like in an investment bank or something like that. I think there's this part of me is like, wow, I wish I had gone to work for Goldman Sachs in 1990 because, like, you know,
Exactly.
I'd be calling in from my yacht right now. You know, so there's a part I have friends who have chose that path, and I'm like, okay, they have really nice lives. You know, they do all right. So there's a part of me, oh, what if I had, you know, but I clearly was not wired for that.
So now you're corporate photography director at Condé Nast and the
Yeah.
visuals editor of World of Interiors.
Yeah.
What do you love about this new role?
I love both. So, and I have this weird perfect mix. So, as corporate photography director, I oversee the US archive for Condé Nast, and I work with our sales teams and our editorial teams on kind of telling the story of Condé Nast and our brands, Vogue, Vanity Fair, The New Yorker, Glamour, all these amazing
Yeah.
GQ, all these amazing brands. So I have this wonderful kind of look back at the history of photography, the history of the company. I love the company. It's a huge part of who I am. I've spent most of my life now at Condé Nast. And the flip side is I'm the visuals editor at the World of Interiors, and that happened about 3 years ago when Hamish Bowles came on as editor in chief. He needed a little help for the first couple of issues because, you know, what happens, you have regime change when a new editor-in-chief has
Right.
everybody left, right? And everybody had been at World of Interiors with Rupert for like 30 years. He left, they all left. That's what happens. And he needed some help to get through. So Anna called me in. It was kind of a funny story, but she called me in and was like, you know, can you help Hamish get through the first issue or two? And I was like, of course. And then he came in and the two of us. And then I started doing it and I was like, wow, this is amazing. Because funnily enough, after I left Vogue, which was 2016, I kind of said to myself, and I said to Lisa, like, I don't ever want to be a photo editor again. Like, I was photo editor of Vogue. It's never going to be any better. Like, I just
Yeah.
need to move on. And like, it'll never be any better than this. And, but in the back of my mind, I was like, yeah, but the one magazine I would love to do is the World of Interiors. Cause it's like a lot of people, was kind of my other favorite magazine other than Vogue. It's amazing. And, but I always thought, well, I don't know. It's like in London and like, it's never gonna happen. But I was like, yeah, you know, like that would be like, if I had the only job I'd love to do is be like photo editor of World of Interiors. So then when it happened, I kind of went back to Anna after I did the first issue and I said, like, I really want this job too. I'll wear both hats. I'll
Yeah.
figure it out. And she was absolutely amazing. She got on the phone with me and we went back and forth and talked to HR and stuff, and she figured it out for me.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I'll wear both hats. You won't notice. They'll be seamless. And I did it. I just did it.
And a little bit of a different part of your brain, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I've always loved design. And Hamish and I had done a book called Around That Time, Horse to Pee, Horse to Vogue, which is his interiors work from the 60s through the 80s. So I loved interior design. I think a lot of people in fashion do. I think it's just kind of this obvious counterpart. And so I definitely had an interest in it. And so, but I always thought, well, like I had worked at Vanity Fair and I had worked at Vogue, but I'd never worked at a design magazine. And so I also in my mind was like, well, I'd love to work at a design magazine, you know, because I haven't really done that. And so when it came up, it happened. I just thought, I love the archive, great, but I've got to try to do this too.
And talk to me a little bit about the archive. How big is it and what are the years that it spans?
Yeah, so we, you know, have about 1.2 million images. We have over 1 million images. It really starts with, let's say, the very first issue of Vogue, which we have December 17th, 1892.
Wow.
Up until we still have digital files. We kind of stopped for the most part in 1978, generally speaking, copyright laws changed. So for the most part, things started to be returned to the photographers. We had some photographers, Irving Penn, Patrick Demarchelier, Arthur Elgort, which they continued to, we had special agreements with them. So we continued to receive material into the 90s and early 2000s. After that, everything becomes digital. So it's not really something that sits in the physical archive anymore.
When did they recognize that that was important to own those images?
Well, the interesting thing is right from the get-go, Condé Nast, the man, saw the value of holding on to the material. And I can't tell you exactly why, but he saw value in it, and he hired the best people. He gave them the resources they needed to do their best work, and he held on to the material. And the copyright laws allowed for that, so there wasn't an issue there at the time. But I also, there's just something he saw it. A lot of other publishers didn't. And then they either gave it back or they just threw it away. And I'm so thankful that he did that. And the reason I say that is because with some of these photographers, without the material that we had, they would have been lost to history.
Yeah.
Like to say, well, they would have just gone back to the estate or the family. Well, a lot of cases there was no, and there's still to this day, there is no estate. Some of the photographers, there is no estate. There is no family. Right. There is nobody to take care of it.
When you took over as the head of it, did you take over from somebody else? I mean, had this been an active process?
Went through a couple of versions, iterations. They had a couple, we brought in a new vice president, and then they brought in another vice president. And there was a lot of changes. I worked for about five different people in 6 years. So it was a lot of changes. And just sort of through that process, I ended up kind of being where I am today. I was kind of part of it. I was working with a licensing group at one point. But as things kind of shook out, I ended up kind of being responsible for the US archive. And
huge job.
Yeah.
What's been your biggest personal or professional struggle to date?
That's a good one. I think the hardest, well, from a sort of macro level, I think so much has happened. And people talk about legacy media. I mean, people started talking about, you know, print is dead 15 years ago, which was not true. But it was painful to go through that process of be feeling like you're on top of the world and working at a magazine is the center of the universe and you're on top of the world and all those cliches. And to seeing it start to kind of deteriorate in terms of the business environment because the landscape changed. Like, right. It's not anybody's fault. It's just the world changed.
Did you feel it early? Like, did you understand that early?
I saw it and I am definitely a worrier by nature. Anyone will tell you. And I think, honestly, I probably overreacted to it because of what I had gone through with my dad and watching him lose his business. I was hypersensitive to that kind of thing happening. And so I think when I first started to feel that the floor was starting to cave in, I was probably overreacted, kind of like, oh my God. And I think a lot of people didn't. And the truth is, I think there will be magazines around for a long time. And we're doing a lot of things now digitally that I think we're brilliant at, and globally. We're doing a lot of really interesting things at Condé Nast. And we have amazing people here. But I think that was really hard. You know, like I'm a guy who struggles with confidence for sure. You know, I'm not like a super confident person. Some people are, it's just not my DNA. I always feel like I have to prove myself. So, I probably would benefit from being more confident, but I just, it's who I am.
What did you once believe about yourself that's no longer true?
I always thought that I was kind of the loner. You know, and I kind of was, and I always thought I'm really kind of an outsider, I know everybody says that, and but I always felt a little bit like an outsider. But interestingly now, I've been out of Vogue for 8 years. I'm still obviously work at Condé Nast, talk to Anna and everyone, but I really feel like I'm part of this family.
Yeah.
And it's kind of amazing. Like Tani Goodman is a close friend of mine, and I have lunch with her. Phyllis Posnick is a close friend. I have lunch with her and I see her. I went to a gallery opening recently and on the Uptown at Gagosian exhibition, which I ended up writing for World of Interiors. But Grace Coddington was there, who worked, obviously at Vogue. Samira Nasser, who worked with me at Vogue and who's now at Harper's Bazaar. Lauren Santo Domingo, who worked with me at Vogue. Tabitha Simmons, who's still there, who I worked with at Vogue.
So it's
And
like old home week.
connection. I felt this like connection, and we're all kind of like we were together, you
Yeah.
know? And we spent so many years together, certainly Grace in 30 to 20. And I feel this connection with Anna too, you know? And I've known Anna for 30 years, 32
Yeah.
years, you know? And some of the photographers. So I really do feel like I'm part of this family. And it's really, even Polly Mellon, before she
Oh.
passed, may she rest in peace, I never actually worked with Polly. I missed her by a couple of years, but I got to know her later and I had worked on getting her archive sent to SCAD in Savannah, the school. And I spent time with Polly, and we had this really sort of visceral connection, even though I missed her by a couple of years.
Yeah.
But she was like a Vogue editor, you know? And we like knew one another. Like we connected and we had that thing. And so that's what I really love. I look back and I thought after that gallery opening, I was with Lisa, and I thought, wow, like, you know, that's kind of my other family, you know? And those relationships are not going to go away.
No, the little I know you, even I do know you're a great friend. I mean,
Thank you.
two people. So I don't think you're a loner at all.
Okay. Maybe I'm not.
People
Maybe I'm
adore you,
better.
and I mean, I think you're such a deep, close friend to people.
Thank you for saying that. I feel a lot of the same things for you. One of the things I think happened that I became more social as I got older. I really value my friendships and I really value supporting people and helping my friends. Like, I really, really value that. And even now I'm writing for worldofinteriors.com and I love writing for worldofinteriors.com. And the thing I like writing about most is when I get to write about my friends. And I've had that happen a couple of times recently. Like, or I've got Ruth Runberg, who's from Charlotte. We just featured one of her Charlotte candles. Every month we do editor's picks. And they were like, okay, it's Valentine's Day. And I was like, oh, Queen Charlotte would be amazing, a pink one. And so I emailed Ruth and she's like, totally. And I'm like, I love that. Like, I
Yeah.
love supporting my friends and
And
doing
to make the
stuff.
world small.
Yeah, and it's like good stuff. Like it
Yeah.
deserves to be there. And I've written stories about friends of mine and about their homes and things like that. And I love that. So I really do value my friendships, you know, because I know what it's like to not have a lot of friends, you
Yeah.
know, and
Clark.
it's different. Yeah, you know,
Clark
when I was in
Johnson.
college, I definitely was not going to get voted most popular, you know. I got a great experience out of it, but I didn't have that kind of thing you see in the movies, college experience, you know.
If you could give advice to a photographer at the start of his or her career, what would it be?
Yeah, I'll give the piece of advice that I got, which was the hardest question a photographer has to answer is what to photograph. It's the most basic one. This guy who I worked for, who was brilliant, who I assisted a tiny bit, and he said, that's the hardest question, what to photograph. And when I would teach, when I've taught at School of Visual Arts for a couple of years, I would say, like, you got to kind of understand yourself, right? Like, you have to feel like, what are you interested in? Like, what, you know, because the best photographers often, you know, sports photographers, like you have to kind of, and this photographer said the other thing, he said, look, if you want to be a fashion photographer, you have to know what's out there. You have to know who's shooting, like what's happening. So the advice I would give is try to pick a lane in a way, like to say, well, I love fashion, or I love interior design, or I really like sports, or I love journalism and politics, and really get into that lane, know who's out there, know who's doing the work. And look at that work and say, okay, well, that's the bar. You know, these are the best people. This would do. So I think that's the thing is try to kind of figure yourself out because there are so many photographers. There's so much picture taking now. I mean, it's endless. You have to find something that you can bring to it that is unique. And that the only thing that you can bring to photography is yourself, because everything else has been done. There's so much been done.
What did you wear to prom in Connecticut?
Oh my gosh. Well, you got to understand it was 1986.
Okay.
So I wore a classic black tux, but I wore it with the red tie, the nice. Red cummerbund. Yes,
ah,
yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Shoes? Anything? Converse or?
No. Oh my God, I would never do that. It was all rental. It was a rent to tux, rent to shoes. I'm sure they were shiny.
Did your date wear red?
Well, this is a crazy story. So, and I had never told this story, but I actually took two waitresses that I worked with to my prom. And I know.
I love it. It was two.
This is
okay.
The craziest story. So, as I said, I was not, certainly not a popular guy in high school. I had some friends, but I was not, I didn't have a girlfriend or anything like that. Okay. But I was working I love to work, and I was working at this restaurant called Rory's. And I was making, again, it was part of like my whole thing. The thing I did in high school is the same thing I did in college, which I was kind of going to school, but I was really working because I love to work.
Yeah.
And I was doing really well at work. I was getting paid in cash. It was like a yuppie bar. It was 1986. Things were booming. The restaurant's booming. The guy who owned it was a real kind of like this very good looking, super successful guy. We had all these beautiful waitresses. I was making like tons of cash. I'd make like $180 cash because the place was just booming. And I had this woman, this girl who was a friend of mine, she used to ride to school with me. And she said to me like, do you want to go to the prom with me? Right. And I was like, that would be amazing. Cause I never go for it. I was like, yeah, I'll go to the prom with you. I was so excited. I'm going to go to the senior prom. And then she started dating some guy who went to another school and like a classic high school thing. Right.
Yeah.
And she didn't know what to do. Cause he was upset that she was going to the prom with me. But she was, you know, she was like 16 to 17. She was terrified. She wasn't going to confront me or say anything like that. So she got one of her friends to kind of come to me like, Amy's really, she doesn't know what to do. And the guy's giving up. So I was like, it's okay. We don't have to go to the prom, whatever. So I told her one morning on school, I was like, don't worry. We don't have to go to the prom. And she was so relieved. She's like, thank you. Thank you. But then I was like, what? I don't know why. Oh, so what happened is I go to work at this restaurant where I'm working like Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, right? And the waitresses were like my big sisters, right? You know, and they're all like 30 years old and they were very beautiful. And they said, oh, like, what's going on? I said, oh, I'm not going to my prom. Like she, you know, this girl bailed on me and da, da, da. And they was, and one of the waitresses said, you know, she was like 30 and she was like, I'll go to your prom with you. And then her roommate who lived with her said, I'll go too. We'll both go with you to your
you
prom.
You showed up with like two.
So
hot.
I had to buy prom bits. I had to sneakily buy two prom bids, right? But it gets worse. It gets worse. It gets worse. So I set the whole thing up. I bring both corsages. They're like, you know, va-voom. Like they're... And we go to the prom and we get there. And I'm sitting there with these two 30-year-old waitress like women. And like everybody's like, what the F is going on here? And we get up to get our picture taken. And I never forget, the photographer's like trying to figure out how to pose both of us, three of us. And he goes, wow, like hormones these days. Like he just does not know what the hell's going on. And he takes the pictures, which I still have.
Oh my God.
And then we just left and went to dinner at a restaurant. We just ditched, which is terrible. The interesting thing, and it was a little bit of a life lesson for me. So it was very funny and crazy. And you know, the kind of thing at 17, you're like, oh, it's a great idea. But now, yeah. You know. But what was interesting is that the female friends, the girls at that point, 17, who I was friends with, a few of them who I was friends with at school, particularly Amy, my friend, were like furious with me about it.
Oh, wow.
They were really angry and they basically never really talked to me again. Because
they
like
thought
the
you were like making a mockery of the prom?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was like their big night to look beautiful.
Huh.
And it was really,
so
I didn't understand it. It took me years to kind of unpack it.
Yeah.
But I realized they were mad. They were kind of like, what the hell? Like, what's wrong? And they wouldn't like talk to me and they were mad. Wow. And I thought it took me a long, you know, you don't get something like that when you're 18. But years after I thought about it, and I thought, you know, this was their big night.
Huh.
To look beautiful, to be dressed up, to have and I kind of made a mockery of it. And then there was three empty seats at some table, which is not cool. And it was a life. I mean, it was just, I don't know, it was a crazy thing, but the interesting thing was really a life lesson. Cause I thought, you know, you have to be careful about, you know, your impact on people. You can do something that you think is funny and just happens, but like you can really hurt someone's feelings.
Wow.
Especially, you know, you think it's funny, right? So I really try to be like sensitive to, you know, think about how this is going to impact someone else.
What a great story.
Yeah. And it was really profound because I think about, first of all, I think it was amazing because these women, the courage and also like the love
Yes.
that they kind of showed me,
Yeah.
that like I was really their friend. I mean, to be a 30-year-old woman and go to a high school, get dressed up and go to a high school prom
I love it.
to show up for me,
Yeah, I love that.
to show up and to have no fear and be like, I don't care, we're going.
Yeah.
And it was
To
Lori and
support
Cindy.
you.
Those were their
Yeah.
names.
Lori and
And
Cindy, I love it.
Lori and Cindy. And one was
Oh.
blonde and the other was brunette.
Oh, wow.
And they were super pretty and like, dude, and like,
That's a
and they
great
came to my
story.
prom. And so it really, and then those few women who were friends of mine, they never really talked to me again after, but which is sad. It kind of bums me out. But, and I didn't mean to hurt them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does, it's the kind of thing that does make me think, like, okay, really think about your actions here and how they're going to
Yeah.
affect people. But anyway, this is 1986, you know.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank you.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. Please follow us on Instagram at What We Wore Podcast for additional content and show updates. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.